Blessed be the darkness, the vast expansion, the all-encompassing, all-surrounding womb of space. Blessed be the light, the penetrating point, the all-focusing, all-aligning core of creation. Blessed be the blade that divides the darkness from the light, thus generating duality, and from duality is all substance formed. The cleansing by water, the purity of salt, combining together, so merged we exalt. By the blade that separates the darkness from the light, the babe from the mother, and the world of the living from the realms beyond, I conjure this circle as a sacred place, shifting the confines of time and space, an island apart and a fortress between yesterday's sorrow and tomorrow's dream. Blessed be the vessel wherein the divided may unite. Welcome to the Covening Podcast. In the last episode, you were taught the verbal and gestural basics of calling down the gods and the charge of the gods, as well as some ideas about polarity within the circle and non-binary deities. The liturgy that I have provided so far was all authored by me and has been provided as an example. Open up any nonfiction book about witchcraft, particularly the older ones, and you will find blessings for salt and water, quarter callings, and the techniques for drawing down. What you won't find is the blessing of darkness and light, because that is specifically windblown. Ritual details and ritual styles vary from coven to coven and from tradition to tradition, but at the rudimentary level, they are all very similar. The format of our podcast, Coven Rituals, is derived from the format of the rituals that the four founding members of Windblown attended before there ever was a Thistledown Coven. Those came from many sources, including pagan Feriferia and established Wiccan traditions, Gardnerian, Alexandrian, New York Welsh, Blue Star, even the Frosts. What was not created by Gerald Gardner himself with a great deal of help from Doreen Valiente came from older sources, mostly various occult mystery societies and what many of us call ceremonial magic, the Freemasons, the Rosicrucians, the Golden Dawn, and where did they get it? The Kabbalists, Catholic masses, various old secret spiritual societies, and early text translations from anthropologists and archaeologists like E.A. Wallace Budge. Some texts I have found and will share with you in future episodes. The format stuck because it works, but that isn't to say that other formats won't work. The first part of the ritual format is to mentally and physically prepare yourself for an encounter with the spirit world or the divine. That involves setting aside all things that usually occupy your thoughts, emotions, actions. Declutter your space and your mind. Next, prepare and contain the specific space, location, or environment so that what you call into it will come inside and everything else will stay out. Delineate the physical area you will occupy. Ensure that you will not be disturbed or interrupted, that whatever you place down will stay there, and not be blown away by a gust of wind or a wandering child or a pet. If you are doing ritual outside or in places where interruptions are possible, consider how you will handle them in advance if the interruptions should occur. The third part is to assemble all the spiritual elements you need in order to do the manifestation. Typically, this involves interacting with your tools, calling guides, guardians, or the four classic elements. The fourth step is to perform the spiritual manifestation, the drawing down, or if there is no drawing down, embarking on astral travel. After the manifestation, the spirit you have called or the energy you have gathered can then raise power, bless your magical working, and join you in your symbolic communal meal and your celebration. And after all of that, you need a way to ground, release the excess energy, and reverse the process of preparing the space so that the location can be as it was before the rite. What is supposed to happen at some point in the circle is that participants will have a liminal experience. Each participant may have it at a different point within the ritual, and it may last for as much as a couple of minutes or be very fleeting. By liminal experience, I mean a much smaller version of a peak experience. And peak experiences can and do happen within coven ritual, but by very definition, they are rare occurrences. And some, or maybe most witches, may never experience a full peak experience within coven ritual. But most witches should be able to allow a mild altered state, an alpha brainwave state, within ritual similar to a guided meditation. For example, when a ritual is performed virtually over the internet, it sometimes very much resembles a guided meditation. If any of you are unfamiliar with what I have just mentioned, I'm sure you have at some point had an experience where you realized that for the last few seconds before this current moment, your consciousness was somewhere else. That might have been a liminal experience. Alpha brainwaves, on the other hand, are very easy to induce. You achieve that state by going to a music concert, or watching a movie, or as you fall asleep each night. Consciousness is the primal building block of the universe. Consciousness is fundamental. We are not physical beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having an incarnate experience. Consciousness and spirit might be the same thing, and if they are not the same thing, they are at least very closely linked. When you are in spirit, you are neither male nor female. And you aren't African or Asian or European. This is what Albert Einstein and the great yogis mean when they say that our separateness is an illusion. That is the mystery of the double-edged blade. You cannot cut another without cutting yourself. Consciousness does not come from the brain. Consciousness is all around us. Our brain, our five senses, and all parts of our body are receivers and filters. We have receivers and filters that are unique to each of us. When you incarnate, your personal filters create the universe in which you live. Your experience is in the eye of the beholder. That is not to say that you control everything that happens to you. It is possible that you might not be able to avoid a natural disaster or some harm that other people might do to you, either intentionally or unintentionally. But hopefully we can find a way to strengthen ourselves and make recoveries from tragedies. So how does this knowledge inform what we do in circle? Before we go into various techniques, we need to spend a little time discussing interruptions. There are two different kinds of interruptions you need to be prepared to handle: the easy ones and the difficult ones. The easy interruptions are things like you discover you left the sabbat cake on the kitchen table instead of bringing it into the ritual space in the next room, or one of the participants suddenly needs to take a restroom break. Well-organized covens usually have a designated responsible initiate to handle such issues so that the ritual leaders can remain inside the circle. The procedure is as follows. The designated initiate goes to the perimeter of the circle, wherever the exit is needed, and slices a hole in the boundary of the circle by using their thami to trace a banishing earth pentagram in the air. That creates a hole in the circle. At that point, either the designated initiate can exit the circle, retrieve the sabbat cake, and re-enter, or the participant who needs the restroom break can exit. If the interruption is anticipated to be a short one, the ritual can be on hold until the participant returns. Otherwise, the designated initiate should reseal the circle by drawing the evoking earth pentagram in the same spot on the circle perimeter, and the rite should continue. When the participant returns, if the circle has already been resealed, the participant must wait outside the circle for the designated initiate to reopen a hole in the circle. Then the participant crosses into the circle and the designated initiate reseals the hole in the perimeter. Those are easy interruptions. Then there are the more difficult interruptions. The park manager comes by and tells you that you are not allowed off the path in this part of the park. Someone's robe catches fire. Anything involving authorities or danger or health emergencies, anything that is likely to require you to end the circle for everyone right now? Here is the general pattern, and you as ritual leader will need to adapt this to your situation. Evaluate if it might be possible to de-escalate the situation and have a long pause, but then continue with the ritual. Is the park manager willing to make a small exception this one time? Can the fire be smothered swiftly? If the situation is manageable, poll the circle participants to find out if they want to end the ritual or continue. If the answer is to end the ritual, then if the quarters have been called, they should be dismissed, and the circle should be dispersed. This can be done swiftly. If the answer from your participants is to continue with the ritual, then you need to evaluate if your circle space has been breached. If it has been breached, you may want to recast the circle and call the elements again before you proceed. If the ritual needs to be ended immediately, maybe you are experiencing an earthquake, be sure to be a good camper and douse your incense and candles. Do the liquids, water, and wine need to be poured away? Sheath your thamis, pack everything that needs to be packed, and deal with your emergency. After the emergency is handled, someone needs to return to the ritual space to do any additional physical cleanup, as well as psychic cleansing. The extent of the psychic cleansing will depend on what you were doing in circle at the time of the interruption, what damage the interruption did, and what energies are being felt to linger there. Back to the original question. What are the techniques we use in ritual to help to provide an otherworldly experience for our participants? To help remind our participants that there is a greater reality where we are all fragments of the same whole. One technique is symbolism. Symbolism serves as psychic reminders, either consciously or semi-consciously, of the greater reality. Our 9-foot circle is similar to a kiva or a sweat lodge, as it symbolizes the womb. The number 9 is sacred to the goddess, as it is a number of months preceding childbirth. No, we don't always use an exactly measured 9-foot circle, but when we can, we do. Any measurement can be divided into 9 sections. There is nothing magical about the foot measurement, except that it is thought to have been based on a human stride. Similarly, our cords are 9 feet long, so that we can use them to draw our circle. When we loop them in half, we have the radius of our 9-foot circle and can use them to draw a circle for ourselves outdoors. The cord itself, about our waist, recalls the umbilical cord. Some astral travelers speak of a silver cord that links a person back to the physical realm when they go on astral journeys. The mixing of salt and water is the creation of amniotic fluid. One of the reasons the Catholic Church did not want female priests is because the symbolism would reveal itself to them too easily. Another technique we use is our agreement of what happens on the astral as we perform our tasks in ritual. An atheist friend asked me, "So when you say on the astral, you just mean in your imaginations, right?" "Yep. That's it." In circle ritual, we synchronize our imaginations, and that permits us to link our consciousness and expand our filters so that we can receive and send more than what we usually do as individuals. Alfred Korzybski reminds us that the map is not the territory, and we know that, but we are temporarily turning that idea around by all agreeing that when we are in ritual in Coven Circle together, we are all aligning our maps, here, inside the circle, Our shared imaginations help us birth thought forms into reality and shape the future territory according to our inner maps. Another key technique is the sense of playfulness. We call it mirth and reverence. Taking ourselves too seriously can quash possibilities in imagination. Playfulness means that we can use flash powder, or silly songs, or even tell jokes or play games or perform a drama within the circle ritual. There is a specific time for that, after we have cast the circle, either before we call the gods or while we are sharing wine and cakes. Symbolism, play, and mirth and reverence, our shared mental maps, are reminders of the essential unity of all beings and that we are all plugged into the same cosmic consciousness. The spirits and gods we interact with are interpretations of some human filter of a portion of that universal consciousness. During certain acts within the coven ritual, all attention must be on that act. No stray thoughts, no talking with your neighbor. The blessing of the darkness and the light, the circle casting, the calling of the quarters, the invocation of the goddess, the charge of the goddess, the invocation of the god, the charge of the god, and the great rite, which we will now explore. But there is a time within the circle for informal merriment, and we will get to that too. After the goddess has been invoked into the high priestess and given her charge, and the god has been invoked into the high priest and presented his charge, they have sexual union, or at least symbolic sexual union, as performed by the Athami and Chalice. In Windblown, times when the Great Rite would be an actual physical Great Rite rather than a symbolic one are extremely rare. This differs by coven and tradition. Either the high priestess or the high priest holds the chalice in front of themselves with both hands, and the other elder holds the blade above the chalice, also with both hands, with its point down, pointing into the chalice. The elders recite the blessing, and then the one holding the athami brings the tip of the blade into the wine in the chalice. Then they repeat a similar action, but this time with the athami in one elder's hand and the sabbat cake or cakes on a platter in the other elder's hand. Kissing might also be involved, depending on the high priestess and high priest and the feeling of the moment. After the cakes and wine have been blessed, they may be distributed to the coveners or set aside until after the magical work is complete and then distributed to the coveners. The elder holding the athami says, "As the athami is to the male." The elder holding the chalice says, "So the chalice is to the female." Together they, or everyone, says, and joined they bring blessedness. The high priest and high priestess each sip the wine and pour a libation into the ground for the earth, or into a libation bowl that will be brought outside for the earth later. The high priest and high priestess each nibble a piece of the cake and crumble a libation into the ground for the earth, or into a container that will be brought outside for the earth later. When passing the cakes and wine to the coveners, the refreshments are distributed clockwise. Windblown does not have a standard way to distribute wine and cakes. There are several methods we have used, some more awkward than others. The awkward ones involve one person holding the chalice for the other person while they drink. If tension is high in the ritual, breaking it with some silliness at this point might actually be a good idea. It can be pretty funny to watch your high priestess try to sip the wine while the high priest holds the chalice for her. If you have ample wine and cakes, everyone may perform a libation in addition to partaking themselves. Some groups pass the cup and cakes with "Blessed be," or "May you never hunger, may you never thirst," which, if I recall correctly, is originally from Church of All Worlds. They may have gotten it from Stranger in the Strange Land. After the wine and cakes have gone around the circle once, we typically sit on chairs, if they are provided, or the floor or ground and chat informally. That is part of making merry. If we haven't done the magic yet, we can plan for how we will do it. If we have done the magic already, we can critique our methods. A part of Wicca that I have always enjoyed is critiquing our methods, because it is a time for us to learn how to do things better and what particularly worked that we might want to do again. This is also a good time to tell jokes or stories, play your flute or drum if you brought them into the circle, sharing anything you think your fellow coveners might enjoy. When wine and cakes are finished, or when each participant has had as much as they want, it is time to either do magic, usually with a cone of power, if you have not done it yet, or to dismiss the quarters and disperse the circle. Remember I mentioned that sometimes the wine and cakes get blessed and then set aside until after the magic is complete. So how and when do we make a cone of power, and how do we release the excess energy within the circle? A cone of power is the method by which all circle participants can combine their energies to do magic within the circle. Do we do cones of power at every circle? It depends. Some covens use the sabbat quarters and cross quarters for seasonal celebration, and the esbat moons for magic. But it is a guideline, and magic is performed when there is a need, so long as the participants are capable. A cone of power can be almost anything in which all those in circle participate, and that builds to a crescendo within the circle. It could be as simple as a song or a chant while standing in place. You, as a coven, can decide if this crescendo is an orgasm of the circle, or the birth of a thought form, or a spiral of smoke, or a rocket shooting into the sky. You all agree in advance that when the crescendo is reached, that the energy is sent either up into the sky or pointed at a specific direction. Usually, we direct the energy through our arms and hands, pointing them in the direction of the release. Sometimes we use our thamis. If we are all dancing clockwise around the altar, holding hands and chanting and going faster and faster until the crescendo is reached, which is one traditional way to do a cone of power, then we need to be mindful that we don't stab someone with our thami. Sometimes doing something silly actually packs the biggest punch. If you are the leader, get comfortable with using the words, "Let's all pretend." Remember, mirth and reverence. For example, when doing a healing for a dog, the coveners might circle the altar on hands and knees, chanting, "Woof, woof, Fido." If you have coven members who cannot dance in circle, then use a chant for your cone of power. If your circle has one standard method for doing the cone of power and you do it the same way every time, it loses its effectiveness. Monotony kills imagination. Novelty seems to promote psychic communication. So after the circle has been cast, at a time when you are not actively engaged in a specific ritual act, discuss what magical workings need to be done and encourage any experienced coveners to suggest how to make the cone of power for this or those particular workings. Sometimes a coven uses one cone of power for several magical workings at once, or sometimes the coven makes a dedicated cone of power for each magical working. It depends on many factors, such as the amount of stamina in the group and how similar each magical working is. For example, if you have four magical workings that you need to do, and each of them is a healing, maybe you can combine them all into one cone of power. What will be the signal so we know it is time to stop? When we stop, where do we aim the energy? And finally, what do we do to ground? None of this needs to be complicated. Typically, the signal is the leader calling out something like, "Now," and typically the cone of power is sent up unless something else has been specified. If you are the leader, when is the cone of power ready to be released? Sometimes we use the word intuition to mean multiple considerations, and it varies from instance to instance. If you are doing dancing and notice that your covener with the bad knee is starting to limp, people tend to slow down when they get tired. So if the tempo is continuing to increase, continue, unless you are planning on doing several cones of power in succession. Some leaders have a number of repetitions in mind for a particular working. Three seems a little short. 9 is traditionally a good number, unless some of your coveners are struggling with that. As for grounding, if you are doing more than one cone of power, you can decide if you will just feed the excess energy into the next cone and then do one grounding before you release the quarters, or if you need to ground in between each working. Use your intuitive sense for this. Once upon a time, in a land far, far away, there was a large multi-day pagan festival that had a main ritual that was delivered like a drama by a very dedicated group. They had done their research and preparation and rehearsals, and they performed an enactment of the great rite between the goddess and the king, at the end of which the king was stabbed to death and then engulfed in flames and made to disappear without any indication that he was still alive and well. Just so that you know, I never saw this, but I understand that it was a magnificent performance. Just the watching of it inside the main ritual circle raised a lot of energy. The problem was that there were some outsiders who had sneaked into the area and witnessed the drama. One of the pagan attendants, who felt it was his responsibility to protect the other coven attendees, chased the outsiders back to their vehicle and slashed their tires. Eventually, it all got sorted out without any people being harmed, but there were some rough moments. Selena Fox was an incredible hero that day. The point is, the person who thought he was defending the other attendees exited the circle without grounding. Ever hear the expression mob mentality? The technique of grounding is supposed to disengage our consciousness from an emotionally charged focus and bring us back into our own individual realities. Anything that breaks the tension, like a joke or a coordination exercise, will work. Touching the ground with your hands or fingertips, touching your right hand to your left foot sole, and touching your left hand to your right foot sole. If you are outside, holding your athame while plunging it into the ground will work nicely. If you are doing visualizations or guided meditation, putting your attention into either your heart chakra or your solar plexus works. Unlike the cone of power, if you wish, grounding can be done the exact same way every time. Pick whatever works for you and your coven. There is no requirement for novelty to get back to your mundane state. There is some evidence to suggest that we think of the cone of power the wrong way. Nothing really gets sent. Today, the thought is that energy is not being sent at the moment that the buildup is released. What might actually be happening is something more along the lines of, throughout the entire process, we acknowledge a connection between ourselves and the target that already exists. And in the process of acknowledging that link, our greater self passes a message to their greater self that somehow helps the greater self of the target to refocus on an issue that needs to be addressed. I'm going to postpone going deep into the weeds of magic until a later episode due to time constraints. But I promise I will provide you with everything I know and have learned from studying this over many years. The only thing I will add at this time are, focus on the goal you desire as if it is happening now, in reality, as you create the cone of power. And when you create the cone of power, experience gratitude for it. Do not get bogged down in the in-between steps. Our higher selves are smarter than we are, and if we are clear about the desired outcome, the how will be handled automatically. That's how magic works. In the real world, when we have a goal, we need to take action in steps to achieve that goal. That's how it differs from magic. If we are doing both, we empower both together and create a gestalt. If you have not yet distributed wine and cakes, this would be a good time to do so. After the wine and cakes, magic and grounding, and any merriment that you have in the circle, we are ready to end the circle. Typically, we don't do anything to release the spirit of the god and goddess. We just thank them for their presence in our circle. Lord and Lady, we thank you for your presence in our circle and your aid in our magic. We invite you to linger or leave as you will. When you leave, we wish you hail and farewell. And all the coveners repeat, hail and farewell. And now we dismiss the quarters and disperse the circle. Please subscribe. I think the next episode will be just the spoken part of a full moon ritual from start to finish without the directions about gestures and movement. For those of you who have not attended many full moon rituals, I want to put most of the pieces together for you so you can get a sense of the flow. Future episodes will dive into the checklists and teaching material. And of course, we shall also be celebrating the Sabbats, the cross quarters and the quarters, and the Esbats, the moons. A couple of quick shout-outs. The Pacific Northwest Witches Market, that's PNWWITCHESMARKET.com, and the Witches and Brews Book Club, which is a meetup group for women and non-binary folk. Blessed be. By the blade that cleaves the darkness and light, the babe from the mother, and the world of the living from the realms beyond, I carve a tunnel to the mortal realm. As common persons, we are masked until the circle be recast. Sacred ground remain unseen. Silence rules the worlds between. Till next we answer magic's call and meet together, witches all.